Hello and welcome to Commagers. I'm Brian Costello.
And I'm Jim DeSanto.
And today we have a very special episode for you as we're joined by number one New York Times bestselling author of 23 political thrillers, including his 9 Mitch Rapp novels, including his final Mitch Rapp novel, Code Red, which is coming out on September 12th, Kyle Mills. Welcome, Kyle.
Thanks for having me.
We're so thrilled to have you. Anybody who listens to Commagers knows that for the last almost, you know, for the entire run of our show, I've been talking about being a Mitch Rapp ambassador in Kyle's book. So We're thrilled to have you on to discuss your new book, Code Red, which comes out. And I was saying before we start recording, a little bittersweet for me. I love the book and we'll talk about it, but because it's your final foray into Mitch Rapp.
Yeah, kind of hard to believe. I mean, 10 years I've been doing this. And Mitch and the gang have become such a part of my life. I think about them all the time, you know? And it'll be strange to hand it off and become a fan again. I mean, I know in a way I'm excited about that though, because, you know, I have that day that everybody gets to enjoy that the Mitch Rapp book comes out and you don't know what's in it, you don't know what's gonna happen. And there's that excitement that, you know, I experienced for many years before becoming the writer. And that'll be kind of fun again.
So let's talk about Code Red first. We'll completely spoiler free for everybody. We don't want to ruin it. Not everybody is a Mitch Rapp ambassador and got to read it already.
Including Brian. Yes, I am not a Mitch Rapp ambassador.
Including Jim. But at what point did you know this would be your final one, and how does it inform what we see in Code Red and how the plot to Code Red was devised and everything associated with that?
I was fairly sure it would be the last one kind of right before I started it. So what I wanted to do with this last book is kind of write a standalone. It's funny, the prior book, a lot of people thought was the end of the series, kind of the
really?
Way it ended. Yeah. And so I got all these letters saying, oh, it's been such a great series. We really appreciate it. And it was a cool way to end it. Essentially, Mitch kind of went off into the sunset, dealt with the cooks, you know, for people that have read these books,
yes,
and sort of went back to the family and was going to try to build his life that way. And I said, no, that's not the end of the series.
No, we still have more.
Yeah, in fact, I have another one to write. So what I wanted to do is kind of the opposite of what I inherited, which I inherited, you know, from The Last Man, a book that didn't really end. You know, Vince clearly was intending to finish that story. So I had this major setup and my hands were a little tied as to where to go with it. So I wanted to write kind of an old school, action oriented, kind of badass Mitch Rapp thriller that was a standalone. So that would leave the author, the next author, who I did not know was going to be Don at that point, obviously, that kind of a little bit of a blank slate to launch off of. They could go in any direction they wanted to. And then I also, which is really funny because I didn't realize Don, who's a huge fan and has an insane memory for books, I also like established, like, you know, you'll read about it and you'll see how the characters interact with each other. You know, they talks about where Mitch lives and all that. And I thought, if they give this to somebody at the last minute, I want to be able to read this
and know where to go
and have the universe pretty established. These are the characters, this is who they are, this is where they live, this is what they look like. So a little of that's in there too.
When I was reading it, at times it felt it was the most Mitch in any of the books that you had ever written in terms
very,
of like
very
scopes.
Yeah, it's very perceptive because when I was first researching writing this series, I was like, what's important to readers? And I remember writing lots of Mitch. And so I actually have a ratio. Like I have a number that's how many chapters is Mitch in versus the total number of chapters. And you're right. This one is very much Mitch on his own in Syria. And so it's very, very drawn in on that character.
How Syria, or why Syria, and why the central plot here? And we're not giving anything away because it's, you know, it's on the book covers and everything, but this is, it's very much about the idea of narco-terrorism for all intents and purposes. What drew you to that as an idea for your final Mitch book? And was Syria just a place you wanted to go, or was the narco-terrorism angle what drew you into Syria for this?
Yeah, it was that. I'm really interested in asymmetrical warfare, because I feel like in the modern era, there's really, you'd have to be crazy to start a war. I mean, we're seeing that with Vladimir Putin, kind of saw it play out in Afghanistan. Mm. And there used to be profit in war going way back. You get to take a bunch of land. They might have resources you want. You can make some money, whatever, you know, get some power. Mm. Now it's, you're never going to pay back your investment. And it's a very cold way to think about war, but it's just not a good idea. You know, if China decides to attack Taiwan, they're just going to be a massive losers and all that. It's even if they win, they're going to destroy themselves. But asymmetrical warfare, which Russia's very good at, you know, getting on Facebook, you know, propaganda, assassination, bribery, all these things can be very effective and very cheap. So I wanted to explore that, but I wanted to think of a new way to do it, like a new idea, that a weapon they haven't used before. And this is because the Russians are very involved in Syria, because Syria has become a narco state since the Civil War. It was the perfect setting when I came up with the idea of, you know, you could use America's addiction problems. Obviously, we have the fentanyl problem, and same in Europe, as a weapon against the West. And that's what I wanted to explore. How do you, I'm always fascinated with bad guys, right? Mm. That like, how could somebody defeat America? Well, it looks like a knife they could really twist in us. Well, it isn't coming up against our military. I mean, that's a losing proposition no way how you slice it. But this kind of subtle stuff, you know, the death of a thousand cuts, is much more interesting to me in the modern context.
Was that one of the bigger challenges over the past decade, is figuring out how to transition kind of those obviously early Vince books were so tied to fundamentalist terrorism even before 9/11, then obviously it took off. But how do you navigate that landscape? Because the last decade for political thrillers obviously has changed significantly in terms of where to go.
Yeah, you navigate it with great difficulty. Yeah, because you had these really set eras, right? You had the Soviet era, kind of dominated by Tom Clancy, right? And you had these amazing thrillers, Ludlum, and I mean, there's so many great writers of the era, Le Carre. And so then you transfer, you know, fall of the Soviet Union. Then you had very much a period where Islamic, you know, fundamental, you know, terrorism and insurgencies were the focus. It's because, you know, you're writing about the threats that actually exist, right? That's what's interesting. So that's really fallen off, and the world has become now a very complicated place. It's a lot of economic warfare, like I'm saying, asymmetrical warfare. It's a lot of self-destruction. You know, you see that in the United States with the political divisions. So the real dangers now are less these very monolithic external things. Even China is not, and probably not going to try to destroy us. We buy all their crap. So it has become really complicated. What do you do with that? Do you retreat from it? Maybe say, you know, bring somebody from Mitch Rapp's past back who wants to kill him and really draw it down, less geopolitical and more personal? Or do you kind of lean into it and say, I'm going to try to explore the world as it is today and the way I see it moving forward? And that's what I wanted to do, is to try to find something, you know, a new threat, a realistic threat that is kind of going to be what we're going to see going forward. Because I don't see you know, I don't see necessarily Islamic terrorism coming back. I don't certainly don't see the Soviet Union coming back. So these are the kind of the interesting, I think they're very interesting things that are happening in the world now. But they're a little tricky to write a thriller novel about.
And is it even trickier? Because we talk about this on the show, when we talk about movies a lot. Within what is basically a franchise, right? As opposed to a series of standalone characters, right? How, what is the challenge? How many times did you have an idea that you might think, this is a great idea, but it's not a great idea for a Mitch Rapp novel? Did those events ever occur? And
I mean, I had an idea that I'm going to pursue now. In a way, that happened with the Cooks, the President Cook arc.
Yes.
I literally called Vince's agent and said, I've got this idea for sort of the kind of the collapse of America's democracy. And so I really want to write about it. I think it's going to be super interesting. It's what's happening now, kind of. But I really don't think it's the right story for Mitch. So I'm thinking I'm just not going to do anymore, because I don't know if this is what fans want, all that. And he said, I told him the idea, and he said, you know, I think you can make that work for Mitch. So it was, so I started down that path, obviously what happened, in the Trump era with all the, stolen election talk in the Capitol and all that, I ended up backing my way out of it. That I did not expect to happen. But it was a question of, is this a story that can be told through Mitch's eyes? And one of the reasons that this is my last book is because, I have some ideas that I want to explore about kind of the way the world is now, that with technology and kind of inequality, rising inequality and, globalism and all these things, that I just don't think Mitch would want to be involved in that much. Right. Frankly, I know what Mitch wants to be involved in, because he tells me all the time, he says to me, I don't want to save America from itself. It's not my job, so you guys do what you want to do. I'll keep somebody from blowing you up, but I don't want to get into this other stuff. So that's kind of where I decided that maybe it'd be time to hand it off and so I could explore these things as opposed to, one thing I really never wanted to do with these stories or this series is write Kyle Mills books, if you'll excuse me for referring to myself in the third person, and stick in Mitch Rapp in them. Mm-hmm. Vince's books weren't broke. I didn't need to fix them. So there was only so far I wanted to take them in my direction. Mm-hmm. And that's a little hard to know because the world changes. Who knows where Vince would be right now, what he'd be writing about in today's era if he was still here.
What was the biggest surprise for you through this whole process? Were there things that you had in your mind, like going into this, you're like, this is a path I'm going to take. This is what I think the biggest, detours I'm going to have to make are. And did those come to pass over 10 years, or were the challenges very different than you imagined them when you were writing The Survivor?
Yeah. The main challenge is basically what we were talking about. Seriously, if you sit down and think about this, nobody does, but I do all the time. There's pre-PV, right? Pre-Vince, post-Vince, right? Mm-hmm. So if you look at what the world that Vince lived in, which was not long ago, a little more than a decade, and the world we live in today, they are completely different. So I had this series that was very modern when I took it over. It was dealing with modern issues and all this stuff. And then all of a sudden the world just started changing with technology and politics and all these things at like the speed of light. It's almost like it changes 100 years every 10 years. And you have to make these books feel very current. And so, I look at books in the Mitch Rapp series that I wrote now that feel like historical thriller. It's It's hilarious. So that's been the challenge. And I think it's the challenge for every thriller writer, is that you start a book and you think, is this going to be the world in, you know, a few years? I had to go back and take all the Wagner stuff out of my book. I mean, they played a large part in this book, but who could have predicted they would try, they would attempt to.
That was great. But you've had a few of those things where I've noticed, which has been very odd with the rap, you know, right before Corona, you had that, the power grid attack, which I'll still say in Total Power, I think is the scariest concept I've ever read in a thriller, because it's not about a war or something. It's just about what happens if the power grid goes down. And then literally, by the way, I was in North Carolina driving by one of those power grids that was attacked a couple of weeks ago, and the security didn't look a lot better than it did prior to it. And I was like, and I was with a friend who had read the book as well, and he goes, yeah, that's the one they attacked. I said, it doesn't look any safer than it did when it was attacked.
It's kind of crazy. So I think all this stuff kind of combines to potentially lead you in a really different direction. And I didn't want to do that with these books. Yeah. So, you know, I think there's a flavor to these books and such an incredible history to them that I wanted to stay true to that. And I kind of felt like I was
drifting,
maybe moving a little too far from the original thing. But Vince, I think about it every day. Like, what would he think of all this? What would he be writing about right now? It wouldn't be the same stuff. I mean, he wrote about terrorism because he was a guy who wrote in the moment. He wrote what was in the headlines at that time. So I'm constantly thinking about, where would he have taken the series? Is it similar to where I would, or no?
Well, when you revisit stuff, because I want Jim to talk about
this. Yeah, I have a question.
Jim's written some stuff, too, music. I'm always interested when people have written stuff and go back to it, how they feel about it.
Well, I think, it depends. For me, music is like, I go through a long period where I hate it. as soon as I'm done, I'm like, I'm done with that. I can't even listen to it. But yeah, I think later on I can go back and go, oh, there was something. It seems like more of a snapshot. I had a question sort of about the balance of especially in the thriller genre, because obviously the plot has to be this well-developed thing that is almost like a puzzle you need to crack and figure out how it's all going to fit together and build tension and make an exciting path. But you're also dealing with such a beloved character, right? That how do you balance maybe the plot with giving Mitch enough of an arc to make him still seem like he's just not the same Mitch every in 10 books, right? Like that he's also maybe not significantly growing and changing, but how do you balance that? Is either one of those more exciting for you as a writer?
I like writing characters and developing characters that feel very real, but it's kind of difficult because Vince aged Mitch realistically. Every year a book came out, Vince was a year older, but I stopped doing that. And that does create incredible challenges because you want a guy who grows, but he's still got to fundamentally be the same person. He's got his personality and worldview has to react to things that he's done and seen. And, you know, this is another reason that the books were becoming a little complicated. And I'm, you know, and then I have probably the worst one thing about that is I've got Anna, which is a young girl that is essentially his daughter now, but it becomes, while it's not as obvious that a 44-year-old isn't aging, it's pretty obvious that a 7-year-old isn't.
Right.
And so she starts to feel like,
The Simpsons.
Yeah. Was it like Claudia was the character from Interview with a Vampire?
Absolutely.
Young girl that never aged.
Yeah.
But if I started aging her realistically, eventually she'd be older than Mitch. And so, yeah, I was super super happy to hand that off to Don and let him figure out what to do with that.
Jim, why don't we ask, can we ask a quick movie question? Because we usually do movies and Anya.
It's related. It's slightly related.
It's related to you. So,
so we actually covered American Assassin on the podcast.
Guys from No Limits. We were on the No Limits podcast. We went on
and did it. You know, I actually quite enjoyed that movie compared to the hardcore Mitch Rapp fans seem to like it a little less than me. But if someone was going to take like your run of the Mitch Rapp series and kind of adapt it for television or for film, is there an actor that you think could pull off your Mitch Rapp? Or who would?
Honestly, I really liked Dylan.
Yeah.
But I mean, I suppose
he was good.
He's way too young, though, for my era. I don't know. I don't know. There is a guy, and I can never remember his name. Colin Farrell.
Okay. Yes, still going strong.
Yeah, who I really like. Now he might be a little too old though. Now I have no idea how old he is now. I think of everybody as being really young. but he's super intense.
Yeah.
You know, he's also, I think it's a real plot point that you have dark hair and kind of dark skin and stuff because you've got to pass as an Arab. Mm.
So, yeah, especially that was an interesting thing I think you really hit on that Vince used to do a lot and you revisited in this book and I thought really interesting ways, his ability to navigate through Syria and people believing he's Syrian.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, they originally, when they were talking about the movie way, way back in the day, you know, they were talking about some other actors and some of them are like blonde and
yeah.
And I thought, no. You know, I mean, literally go find an Arab actor.
Yeah.
You know, if you could, of Arab descent and because that's a plot point that he can go over there and nobody looks at him.
Yeah. People forget. I think sometimes people, depending on where they jump in the series, forget, especially those like very early, like Transfer of Power, where we first meet him, he's like basically living in the Middle East dealing with things.
Yeah, and I think I'm comment, I don't know if it was this book or I think it was the last book, maybe, that you know, one of his strengths is that, you know, he doesn't see himself as on tour or on a mission. That's just home. You know, he's not waiting to get back or you know, doesn't have the or needs more resources. He lives there. Mm-hmm.
When you go back, probably not now because the first book, your last book's going out now, but like in a few years, what do you think has changed the most about you as a writer from this experience, maybe, and something that maybe you look back on as a moment that stands out to you that you're really proud of as part of the series? Is there anything?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I've learned, I think how much I've learned, you know, how much I've learned from Vince reading those books, you know, and studying them and talking to fans, which wasn't really something you did kind of before I took over the Vince Lynn thing, because you didn't have any access to fans, you know, you did just kind of early social media. Right. Mm-hmm. And what fans are looking for in books and things. And so I think that how to write a thriller that people love, because I wrote back when I wrote my own books, kind of books that I loved, you know, that this is you didn't really have any access to people. So you kind of thought if I was reading this book, I'd be fired up about it and just kind of hoping that everybody had the same taste as you. I don't know. In fact, a bookstore owner once said, you know, I feel like the difference is you wrote your books for you and you wrote Vince's books for Vince's fans. And it's kind of true. So I've learned a lot about that. And partially from Vince and partially just from, you know, now having the ability to interact with your readers, where it used to be I'd get, you know, a couple of handwritten letters, you know, a year or something.
Where you've handed it off, Don's going to run with it in his way. If you were to end it, where do you see, if you were in your mind, Mitch going off into the sunset? Is that even possible? Or is it like Daniel Craig's Bond? It's not possible for him to just go on.
I almost feel like I'd have just killed him in some spectacular, irreversible way. Right. Which is kind of hard now because he's really grown and he's got this family and everything. But I just see the guy. So like Stan Hurley, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I wanted to get rid of him. And I thought this guy's just going to go down in a blaze of bloody glory and he's going to be psyched about it. He's like, this is exactly how I should die. You know, I didn't want to, because he was thinking at the time, he's like 80. And he's like, I just don't want to die of old age. I don't want to die of cancer or nursing. I just want to go down as a blaze of glory. And he did. And I feel like Mitch, I'd have taken him down in a blaze of glory.
So what's next for you? Can you tease a little bit of what we have after Code Red comes out?
Yeah. Like many years ago, I wrote a book called Fade. And it was about a former Navy SEAL whose actual name was Salam Al-Fayed. He's an Arab American who had done a lot of work in the Middle East, and he had been shot, and the military and the CIA kind of abandoned him, and he was slowly becoming paralyzed, and the government tries to get him back, and he gets very pissed off and kind of goes on a bit of a murderous rampage of all the people that crossed him. And in the end, he gets shot. Now, the whole idea of this book and the whole idea of his character was that he's kind of crazy and very not like Mitch, same skill set, but not personality wise. And he was just like, they talk about the blaze of glory, right? He buys himself an old Cadillac that he's always wanted with the rest of his money. He drives around playing the Go-Go's really loud and kills a bunch of people with the idea that they're going to get him in the end. Right. And they kind of don't get him. And he's like, come on, time to get me. And in the end, he gets shot by a police sniper. And in my mind, when I finished that book, he was dead. But as time went by, I started seeing him in a coma and that maybe his story wasn't over. And so I've been thinking about him forever. I like write a page of notes a year or something for the last 10 years or something about him. And I think he's a really good guy. We were talking a little bit like we were talking about earlier to see and interact with the modern world and the world we live in today. And it's also a good way to reset because, you know, Mitch's universe is so long, but with Fade, you know, the insurrection at the Capitol, COVID, all these things can have happened. And it's sort of a reset to the current state. Mm-hmm. And he's, you know, I mean, he's a guy that, you know, I don't know, Mitch would be out training, but he'd probably be floating in his pool, washing down Xanax with tequila. And so a very different kind of character, but an interesting guy to bring back. And then he has a lot of weird mental problems because he's in a coma and like doesn't know what's real and what's not. And so he's can't sleep ever and things like that. So it's something like a character that I really loved and fans really loved and people freaked out when I killed him at the end. And I've always wanted to explore him a little bit more. So one of the impetuses for going out on my own was to resurrect this character and see what he's been doing for, you know, last 10 years.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be great. When do we have any idea when we'll get to see it?
No, you know, I've been working on an outline and I actually need to write a proposal and send it to my agent and so that he can send it around.
Brian's already setting you a timeline and you have a book that hasn't even come out yet finished and he wants to know when the next one's coming out.
You gotta keep moving forward, right?
Yeah.
It's been so hot in Spain. I've been holed up in the air conditioning and I realized I have a 20,000 word outline on this thing. So it's progressed pretty well. And, you know, again, having it had it sort of working in the back of my mind for a decade or something. So, but I'm really excited about it because I think it's something I can explore all these weird things that are going on in the world, you know, as it is in the present day and the new threats and, you know, have this kind of cynical, funny, bizarre guy that is, you know, is incredibly good at you know, combat, but on the other side is a little out there, I think is going to be a fun thing to write about.
Awesome. And you will be constantly badgering Don, I imagine, as he's writing his first
I already am. Yeah.
What is that process? Does he want to, I mean, you went through obviously a very different situation than he did. Has that informed how he's been thinking about it? I mean, it must be a huge advantage to have you versus the situation that you had to take over.
It'll be interesting to see. I mean, Don is a huge fan of the books. And I mean, he'll roll out stuff at dinner that he's like, remember that scene and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no, I don't really remember that. And he's like, you wrote it. I mean, I told him, I was like, oh, I'm going to bring back this character named Fade. He's like, oh, he's the former SEAL that killed all those SWAT guys.
So there
you go. How do you remember that? So I'm not sure how much he's going to need me, really. But it's fun to talk about with him, you know, because he has all these great ideas and I'm sort of excited to hear about him, see where he's going to take it, because I'm looking forward to reading the book. And but I mean, I'm there for the whole, well, what was that character? Like, where were they from and stuff like that I have all those notes and everything on. But sometimes that's tough. I mean, I have all the books from Vince. Like, so I have all the books from Vince's word processor in Word format. That I can search. And so like this book, you notice there was the head of the Mossad.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, the head of the Mossad. Oh crap. That was a character in one of his books. So I had to go back. I had to remember the guy's name, which took like 2 days. And then go back. And then with the name, I could search every single book to see that guy's entire history.
That's awesome.
And then I was like, oh my God, did he die? I couldn't remember if he died. But Don now is constrained by that even more so than he was in the Clancy stuff. Cause you've got this really set universe that the readers are super in tune to. Mm-hmm. So if you make a mistake in it, you know, you're going to get raped over the coals.
And you and he will be on tour together for this book, right? Taking a road show, a couple events if anybody is interested. I'm assuming they'll probably be usually live streamed, I would think, for people who are in the area.
Yeah, for sure. For sure from Poison Pen. They have a really popular live stream, but also possibly from the others. So yeah, it'll be kind of interesting. You know, we're doing Once Upon a Crime in Minneapolis and Larkin Owl which is in Georgia, which is outside of Austin. Mm-hmm. And so it should be a fun show because, you know, you normally don't get two of us and we can kind of chat a little bit about where the series has been. And now we have somebody that can tell you where the series is going, which I can't do. And we'll talk a little bit about his Clancy book, you know, books that one just came out. And so people can ask us questions about all, you know, what's been going on. So Clancy about Mitch and everything that's been, where it's going to go from now, you'll be able to get a clue of that. Cause I can't tell you. So, it should be a fun tour and, you know, anybody that's in the vicinity, come out and see us.
And one final question, will we ever get to see the lost chapters you had to get rid of about the insurrection that you wrote?
From the cook stuff.
Yeah, you had to cut.
I dumped a lot of that. I have so much work. Months and months of work went in the garbage can.
You could send the trash bag international mail to me. We don't have to put it out for general consumption.
It's funny because I don't strive to write political thrillers in the sense of being political. Like I never wanted to make the rap verse parallel to the, you know, the whatever administration, whatever it was, the Obama administration or the Trump administration. But, you know, if you're trying to predict things that happen, that can happen to you by accident. So what occurred there is that book started to feel very political, started to feel like I was making a political statement and that, you know, because at the time Trump was the president, they would say, Cook is just a stand-in for Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And I came up with that concept well before anything happened like that happened. So you always have to be careful about how something is going to be read a year or 2 years or something from them. And I didn't want to get my porch light shot out.
Probably a smart idea. Well, Code Red comes out September 12th. By the way, I got to plug the final third, which I won't say anything about. You can't put down. It was one of my, the action set piece in the final third is an all-timer, I think. I absolutely loved it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It's funny because I never wrote a long action sequence in my life, I don't think, until I started with the Vince Flynn stuff.
So good. Kyle, thank you for everything. We loved having you on. Good luck with the book. And we can't wait, for the sequel to Fade as well, whenever that will be
whenever I can finally finish it.
Yeah.
Well, you're in Spain. Enjoy the weather. I mean, yeah. If you live in the Northeast like Jim and I do, you might want to write more in the winter. Probably not in Spain, though.
Yeah. Well, it's finally not 100 today. So that's good.
Not fun. Thank you for everything, Kyle.
Thank you,
Thanks
Kyle.
So much.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.